What is not interesting is when the message survives intact from beginning to end. That is
it. That is interesting.
No, that is uninteresting.
No, it is interesting because then you send it around again to see what happens.
But wait a minute.
I'm Zach.
I'm Riff.
And I'm Kevin.
And it's time for another episode of Video Games Hot Dog. How you fellas been?
Pretty good. I'm doing a little dance.
Yeah?
Yeah, no particular reason.
Okay. Do you guys have anything to look forward to next week?
I ask
because I have a list of things that I'm looking forward to next week, and I want you guys to say something that I can contrast it to.
Oh.
But also, it was a legitimate question. I care about your days and your lives.
I'm flying from Chicago to Phoenix next week. That's a thing that I'm looking forward to. I'll get to see you gentlemen in person.
That's true. You'll get to start drinking from your whiskey advent calendar.
Yeah. Okay. That's totally fucking true. I'm super excited about that.
I'm going on Christmas break in about a week and a half. Does that count?
You're going to miss the next episode. So here's a list. The doctor gave me a list of the things that I'll be looking forward to next week.
Good.
One, bleeding from nose for a few days should slow down or decrease over time. Two, bloody nasal secretions and or scabs for a week to 10 days.
Sweet.
Nasal and or facial pain, pressure and discomfort for 7 to 10 days. Congestion and stuffiness for 7 to 10 days. How to care for it. Use a drip pad / nasal sling to catch bloody drainage. Once the bleeding stops, you may take the drip pad off.
Wow.
Start rinsing your nose with saline once the nasal bleeding slows down. Rinse at least every 2 hours to remove the blood clots and scabs from surgery. This will make your first few post-op visits easier, as you will not have as much crusting to remove in the office.
Oh!
Crusting. Huh.
Yeah, apparently there's going to be some crusting to remove. You may shower or bathe per your normal routine, which is to say, not at all.
Does he realize that your normal routine is in a steam room? Would that have any impact on anything?
I'm gonna ask. Okay. I'm also gonna ask if I can continue to use the disgusting, disgusting neti pot.
Yeah.
I mean, that counts as a saline rinse.
Sure.
I said, have you ever seen
recommend
a level of crusting lower than this? I mean, saline nasal spray.
Yeah,
what?
You might need some sort of crust exercises between you and all of your friends.
I'm not supposed to exercise.
Oh, so no crust exercise.
You should probably
I'm allowed to do Kegels, but nothing strenuous.
So you should probably cut down on snorting that ground black pepper all the time, too.
Oh, I thought you were going to say that ground up glass.
No.
It gets you so high. I mean,
you just like to sneeze.
I can't say no. Yeah, I have that. I have that disorder where I have an orgasm every time I sneeze.
Mm.
You know that old joke. What are you taking for it? Pepper.
Pepper.
Yeah.
Sometimes I sneeze so hard it makes my biceps hurt.
Huh.
I don't understand how that happens.
I don't either. Where do you keep your biceps when you're not using them? Kevin, what hurts when you sneeze?
Nothing really. Occasionally,
oh,
I'll
good.
like the roof of my mouth will be a little out of kilter or like
missing.
Yeah, missing.
Missing.
Do you have to wait for it to grow back, or do you have to go find it? And what if you accidentally sneezed it into a thing that you didn't want to pull it out of and put it back in your mouth?
I think when I sneeze badly enough that like a little bit of booger flies out of my nose, that I'm always sort of a little worried that maybe it was actually part of my brain.
Oh, yeah?
You needed that bit.
Do you feel slightly stupider every time that happens?
I feel stupider every day. So,
do you feel like listening to a slightly stupid album or perhaps some other jam band?
Every one of those ejected boogers is a single word from your vocabulary.
Mm.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, maybe when you were a kid, you could tell the difference between the words pen and pin, and then you sneezed and lost the ability to do so.
And that part of my brain just left.
Yeah. What other parts of your brain are missing these days, Kevin?
I've lost my ability to douse for water.
Did you ever have that ability?
Maybe. I don't know.
But that was just when you sneezed that stick out of your hands.
Right. I was dousing and I sneezed and the stick broke. So yeah, I don't even know anymore.
You know, I can lead a horse to water, but ever since that sneeze, I can't make him drink.
What have you guys been up to for the past week?
Working.
Oh, yeah?
Same as you.
Yeah, pretty much. I can't really think of anything I've done that hasn't been work or video games.
And work and video games are kind of the same thing.
Yeah.
I went to a concert by a friend of mine in Chicago.
Ancha Dubikov?
Dubikov, yeah. It was. She was playing in a group called Winter Bloom.
Like Dubikov?
Dubikov. It's like a four.
She should play in a group called Timbermaw, and you should go to like 100,000 of her concerts.
Yeah.
Just to get, so you can finally get a sweet exalted gold t-shirt.
That'd be pretty great. I made travel plans for New Year's. I'll be in San Francisco for a couple days, and I made travel plans for my mom to come out to Arizona for Christmas.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah.
I got some stuff to put in your mom's stocking.
I bet you do.
Yeah. I got some stuff to put in other people's stockings. I went to Target. I wanted a cup of coffee, and there's a Starbucks in the Target. And I thought, well, I'll kill two birds with one stone. I'll go in, I'll have a cup of coffee, I'll get some stocking stuffers. And I ended up buying all the stocking stuffers and then waiting in line so long behind the single person who was there minutes, full minutes before I got there in line. It was like I was on candid camera, and they were seeing how much time can one woman take at the line at Starbucks. That she ordered four separate holiday souvenir mug things,
okay,
and then asked for them all to be gift wrapped individually.
Oh my God!
Continued, asked multiple questions that required the woman working behind the counter to leave. To go into the back, come out around to the front of the counter, look at something that was in a display case that you could only see from the outside, come back around, and then answer the question, and then kept doing it. And I eventually, I'm not a guy that gets super impatient at times like that, but at that, I was like, all right, I could have, in the amount of time that this has taken, I could have driven to the other Starbucks and gotten a drink multiple times.
Did you?
Because there is a Starbucks within sight of here. So then I was just like, you know what? I'm not willing to take the bet that this is going to be over faster than that. So I'm just going to do it. I'm going to leave. I'm going to throw good money after bad.
Did you check the bathroom?
And then I went to the other
Starbucks
and it was great.
Because I find that that's where another good place to find a Starbucks is.
Yeah. That other Starbucks is hard to get to, though. You think you're going to be able to turn in, but then the ramp just leads up into the grass, and you're not supposed to drive on the grass. There's a sign that says that. Don't drive on the grass. Stupid. That's what roads are for. Dummy.
Why do they? Why don't
there's
they
not
just,
a,
there's signs some are sort of, mean.
There's not actually a sign that says that.
Oh.
Like, why don't they replace the grass with a big barricade?
Yeah.
I don't know, Mr. Plutocrat. Pave over paradise. I went back to Ohio. Did you? No. You were there building skyscrapers on top of all the meadows.
Huh.
What?
What?
Have you guys been playing any video games?
I mostly just been playing World of Warcraft and fooling his money.
Oh man, there was some news from World of Warcraft. Kevin, you're going to be excited about this, but you're not allowed to get excited about this.
The patch
change that allows you to go into raid instances without being in a raid group.
That is correct.
Oh, wow.
And not only that, but they put non-combat pets on a bunch of, like, three non-combat pets in each of the vanilla raids. And if you get all of them, it's an achievement, and they give you Mr. Bigglesworth from Nexramas.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's neat, though, that you can now go in and see that. And you said they altered a lot of the raid fight mechanics to
make
them
soloable. Some of the mechanics
have
been changed,
right?
Yeah. Like Razor Gore and Blackwing, whatever, was altered somewhat to make him soloable.
How did that fight work before that required two people? I'm always interested in the ways in which they set up those fights to require cooperation.
The way that
dudes.
Fight works is it's a room full of dragon eggs, and Razor Gore is a large dragon man. And there is an orb that you can click, and it lets you mentally take control of Razor Gore. So you're moving him around the screen instead of you. And he has some different attacks, and one of them is to destroy an egg. And once you start him running around the room destroying eggs, orcs come streaming out of holes in the walls trying to kill him and you. And you have to get all the eggs destroyed before Razorgor gets killed, or else everybody in the room dies. And the way they fixed it...
Okay, so somebody needs to be controlling Razorgor, and somebody else needs to be defending Razorgor against the orcs. Yeah. Okay. Why would you sit in a room with an orb that allowed any random person to mind control you?
I think it is... I think the lore concept behind it is that the orcs have been using it to control Razorgor for some other purpose.
Okay, but I mean, can he get to it? Why wouldn't he destroy it?
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, maybe they were consistently using it to make him do cool stuff that he wouldn't have thought of himself, and so he was like, yeah, I'll take it. Do you think that the inspiration for this fight came when one of the Blizzard employees came in the morning and was like, oh man, I'm super hungry. I could destroy some eggs right now. And another of his coworkers was like, and started stroking his chin thoughtfully. I've got it. Orcs.
So the way they made it soloable is they made the cooldown on the destroy egg attack much, much shorter. They made Razorgor take a little bit less damage from the orcs. And I think that might be it. They might have made the mind control last a little longer in each burst, because it's a channeling thing that gradually ticks away until you go back into your own body, and then you have to click it again.
When you mind control him, does your body stay there?
Yes,
channeling the spell. It does. Okay, so can you be interrupted?
And... yeah, because you can't be interrupted, but the orcs will run up and beat on you as well.
Okay,
yeah.
So do you have to run Razorgor over to protect your real body?
It's kind of the opposite. The way I passed it was by whenever Razorgor had started having too many guys on him, I'd release the mind control and throw a heal over time spell at him. And because...
also known as a hot.
Yes, throw a hot at him. And that, because of my level, that produced enough aggro that all the orcs in the room ran over and started beating me on me instead. And if I did that when Razorgor was far enough away that I could get some area of effect attacks in at the orcs before Razorgor had run back to me, because I didn't want to hurt him as well, then so it was sort of a balance of trying to before the mind control dropped on its own or Razorgor took too much damage, I had to get him to a point in the room where he was still in range for me to cast healing at him, but not so close that I wouldn't have time to kill orcs before he got to me.
Okay.
And then mind control him again and be in bear form, which is my high defense shape-shifting form.
Are you guys having the same problem that I'm having where we've heard the word Razorgor so many times that it doesn't sound like a real word anymore? But then you realize that it's not a real word. It's just a thing that somebody at Blizzard made up because of breakfast.
Malice.
Yeah. Librum.
Yep.
Although, didn't we find... We finally found that Librum appeared somewhere before World of Warcraft.
Oh, did it?
I don't know if that's true.
But yeah, I went and did all those old raids. I went and hung out in Karazhan a bit. I wasn't able to complete it because there's a chess event that blocks your way to getting to the last few guys, and that is theoretically soloable, but it's very, very difficult.
It was always soloable, but very hard.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm hoping they... I don't really hope that they make it easier, but I hope they make it skippable.
Why don't you just get better
at it?
How
does the chess event work? You have to mind control horses?
Yeah, you have to mind control chess pieces to basically win a game of chess against the AI-controlled side.
It's not exactly chess, though, right?
It's not exactly. It's like a... I think it's only six guys across instead of eight columns.
But, I mean, it's not even like battle chess. Like, it's not... Can the knight only attack things that are in an L shape on the board from it? Like...
I don't think so.
Yeah, I would not have thought that their scripting would support that.
No, it's not like playing chess, but it's like... I don't know. It's like fighting a very structured PvP battle against
Like, they activate a guy on their side, and then you pick a guy on your side to activate?
Yeah, I don't think it's even turn-based, though. It's just all the guys have enough of a cooldown that it's sort of like turn-based.
Hmm.
Yeah, there's
Do you think Razor Girl would be a good name for a baby?
It'd be a good name for a band.
What about if you had, like, a pet bear?
Or a pet band?
Okay, a band of bears.
Sure. What about a Mach 3 Razor Gore?
Okay, that'd be a good name for an airplane that was also a bear.
Yeah.
A bear plane.
Or a bear plane, yeah.
Let's see.
You're still doing puzzles?
I'm looking forward to some drug-addled WoW playing during my recovery.
Oh yeah, I bet.
Yeah, I got to take some opiates and then take the opiate for the masses.
Yep.
Also listen to opiates.
It was really
masses.
Cool seeing Encourage 40. They made that so that you can solo everything in it, but one of the skippable bosses, the giant blob, you need a source of frost damage to beat him.
Huh.
Just so you know.
Huh.
What?
Well, luckily, I've got frost shock.
How do you defeat the guy at the very end? I guess you just get sucked down into his
Cthulhu
and beat on him. And
yeah, him when you get swallowed, you just kill the two tentacles and then step on the
how does that fight
sphincter thing
for our listeners who are not Kevin?
I don't know how that one worked originally.
Hey, Kevin, how did that fight used to work? Because that was you always talked about that like it was a pretty cool encounter.
Well, I never got to see it in person. I only ever read about it. But like from what I remember from years ago about reading it was there's a giant eyeball in the middle, and he has various different kinds of rays that he shoots out of his eyeball at you. And Widow,
like a Ray Stevens.
Yeah, and those chase you sort of around in a circle. He's sort of in the middle of the room, and you have to like dodge those while actually doing damage to these tentacles which shoot out of the ground. And then
a Ray Kurzweil, and the challenge in dodging him is that he lives forever.
And then you like occasionally a mouth will come up and suck somebody down into like the stomach of the guy, and you have to defeat some tentacles down there to get out. Yeah, it was just like there was a bunch of neat stuff in that instance. You get these,
What made it necessarily multiplayer?
I don't remember. To be honest.
Like, if the person inside didn't beat the tentacles, then...
I think maybe the thing outside was only damageable
while somebody was inside.
People were inside beating on the tentacles, maybe.
Mm. That makes sense. I mean, that's how most biology works.
Yeah.
did you get one of those cool bug pets while you were in there?
The mounts? Yeah. Enough of them dropped that I got every single color and had to continue, like, not picking up the leftovers.
Yeah, they're pretty common.
Wow, was that a thing where, like, everybody got?
Yeah, pretty much everybody got one. And
it only works
20 people
that
in there, or 40
instance.
People in there, actually. So,
yeah,
unfortunately, they only work in that instance. You can't even use them in AQ-10.
Yeah.
Yep. It's pretty neat, though. I got a pet off of I think the one from Razor Gore actually, which is a very very tiny dragon man, and aww, he looks kind of strange because he's very obviously the standard dragon man model just shrunk down really tiny.
So it looks like a really high poly count pet.
Yeah, and when he follows along behind you, his legs go extremely fast, and it makes the appropriate noise extremely fast. So he's going as you're walking around.
That bothers me a lot.
There's a quest where you get to become a dragonkin for a little while, and I kept the orb that let you do it. And
because of the horrible jump animation.
Yeah, they didn't make a jump animation for it, so it's just you're just the whole figure just goes up and down with no articulation.
Yeah. It's like they just drew a box around you in Photoshop and moved you in a little arc. Oh, I'm jumping.
Great.
Yep. It's pretty good. That's always the test for whether an MMO is going to be any good or not. If the jump animation is good, then it might be a good MMO. If the jump animation looks awful, then you know that they just didn't put any time into anything.
Yeah, they didn't care.
And this MMO is garbage. Well, like City of Heroes.
Most MMOs are about jumping on top of things to see how high you can get on top of stuff.
Yes. And then take off all your clothes and do slash dance.
No, look, that's only if, we'll get to that in the listener's mail section. That's only if you ever play a goddamn female night elf, even though you're a grown ass male ass man with a beard and a penis and everything.
I'm not playing a night elf.
Okay.
How's the puzzle game going, Riff?
The puzzle game, Fooling His Money, I am getting there. I am temporarily stymied. I've got 7 map pieces left to collect, and they are all part of the same puzzle, and it's like a layered one. It's you solve this group of 7 of the same puzzle, and that unlocks another group of 7 of a different puzzle, and it leads to another puzzle and then another puzzle, and the point where I'm at, I can't find the next puzzle. Like, I found where some of the clues that apparently I'm going to need to solve it are, but I don't know where to go to start it. And so that's kind of baffling me.
I'm not convinced that I want to pay $40 for this game.
I keep thinking that, and then I keep thinking, man, what kind of asshole am I that I'm not willing to pay $40 for a game that somebody worked on for 10 years?
Hmm.
But, like, the first game, what was it, The Fool's Errand? Like, I liked it, but it was not so awesome that I felt like it would have been worth $40, and if it's more of the same, do you know what I mean?
Like, no, I bet it would have been worth $40 back in the day when you had no other options. $40, you either had to buy, I don't know what, 20 pizzas back in the 80s, or a video game.
I mean, there's definitely nothing else like it on the market. Or if there is, then somebody should tell me.
Which is free.
That's not on a market.
Yeah, but that's not,
I mean, that's only
that's
free
not
if
a
you,
video game you can buy and download and do at home by yourself.
It's only free if you have free access to a team of geniuses, which only you do. Not everybody went to MIT, Kevin. Not everybody has ready access to a team of geniuses at their beck and call, Kevin.
There is P&A Magazine by our good friend Foggy, and that is much cheaper than this for 6 months or a year's subscription or whatever.
But can you play it on a computer?
It's delivered on a computer. It's delivered digitally.
You know, there's also a notebook... which gives you the greatest puzzle of all, your imagination. And that's like, what, 10 cents? It's free if you find one on the ground. It is weird because I agree with you. I went to the website and I was like, oh man, I'm going to buy this game. And then I looked at it, that it was $40, and I was like, I am not going to buy this game. And I
think $20 would have been like, you know, $20 sounds okay to me. But I don't know what it is.
It's
about
definitely
worth
$20.
It seems like it's
say.
Just not worth it.
$40 does seem a little steep. I mean, especially if you're not into unscrambling jumbles. You know?
But I wonder what it is about.
There's a lot of it.
What, like, I in general will just, if I am interested in playing a video game, I will pay whatever it costs, right? Because the cost of it is always pretty reasonable. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what it is about this that's actually tripping me up, because I'm not normally particularly price sensitive about video games. And every time I say, I don't think this is worth the money, I think, man, what the fuck is wrong with you? Like, listen to a bunch of things that you've said in the past.
Yeah.
And how can you say this? And I mean, well, I'd say because I believe this.
How many iPhone
why do
games
I believe
do you pay
this?
$3 for? And then
on the flip side, I'm not going to go out and fucking pirate it. Like, it's something that I do want, and
no,
I'm just sort of
not.
I'm either going to get to the point where I'm like, you know, okay, I'm excited about this enough that I'm going to spend $40, or it's going to be something where, like, I just, you know, he either puts it on sale or I just never play it, right? Like,
yeah, I mean, I've bought $20 games on Steam that look kind of cool, and I, you know, I don't really know anything about it, but I'll pay $20 for it. So just click this thing and pay $20 for it.
Sure.
I think a lot of it, like, if A Fool and His Money was on Steam for $40, I would already own it, right? If I could click it without having to, like, log into a PayPal account and authorize a $40 transaction, if I just was like, use credit card on file to buy A Fool and His Money, I would totally already have paid for it.
Huh.
So I don't know what that says. If maybe if he could figure out a way to charge, like, I don't know, some number of fool points. And I don't know how many fool points there are to a dollar because it changes with the like currency rates in Fool Sylvania. I don't expect that you have that same approach, Kevin, because I think you pay attention to the money that you spend on Steam.
Yeah. I have like I've started using Steam's like built-in features for that kind of thing, where I've built up a wish list of apps, and then I am just going to keep paying attention to them over like the various sales and acquire them as it makes sense to do so, like financially. Because like these are games that most of the games on Steam that I have, I have not played, and these are games that I'm not going to play for a long time. So there's no point in spending $30 or $40 for a game now that will be on sale for 5 or 10.
Sure.
And that,
well, except probably supporting an industry that you purport to care about, you hypocrite.
Yeah.
Maybe sure. Maybe you should try spending $40 on a game, and maybe that would allow you to sleep at night. Although I keep trying that, it doesn't work.
I don't
no
have
matter,
any trouble sleeping.
No matter how much money I spend on consumer goods, there is still a hole in me.
I had an awesome
you
dream
need
last
that.
Night where
it's,
I was
that's for pooping.
Fighting get rid of for the for Transformers, like not the toys, but like the characters in the movies. We were all on the same team. It's great.
What?
Dreams about Transformers. You don't care. People's stories about other people's dreams are almost never interesting. Yours tend to be all right because you.
Everybody says that. I think that's just a cliche thing. Stories about dreams are not interesting. Movies about zombies are dumb.
What other platitudes?
Are lame. Dubstep is bad. Somebody in the forum thread was asking about Skrillex Quest. How we felt about Skrillex Quest music notwithstanding, and I had this conversation with Jenny the other day. I do not understand the, like, when I see people on the internet that I respect complaining about dubstep or talking about and making fun of dubstep, this sounds exactly like everybody's grandparents in the 80s talking about rap, and I do not understand what it is about this particular kind of music that everybody's just decided, all right, well, this is my threshold. This is the point at which, oh, the kids today are just listening to fucking noise. Because what Skrillex sounds like to me is like, so like, imagine that some of the guys from Prodigy and Aphex Twin made an album.
Yeah.
This is probably a lot what it would. This is what it would sound like.
And
it is like a much more listenable.
Excellent.
Yeah, it's a much more listenable version of Aphex Twin.
Yeah.
And I liked Aphex Twin.
Yeah.
So
and
like,
I'm all about Prodigy. There's been pretty recently. I've never actually listened to Skrillex himself. I don't think I haven't got around to looking up his stuff, but I've heard some really good dubstep recently and gone and looked on Bandcamp and tracked down torrents of guys' stuff because I thought he did some really good dubstep.
I mean, I don't know that.
I mean, there's bad dubstep certainly,
sure,
but it's not the name does not necessarily indicate something bad.
Like Prodigy, I think it is not. I would not call it great, right? I would not call even the best Prodigy song a great song because it bothers me to some extent when something is not
melodical.
When it is less of an original composition. Mm. I mean, like Prodigy. Did you ever watch that video that was like, here's how to make that Prodigy song? And it's just all of these samples from, you know, records from the 70s. And this is the part that they took. And then this is how they sped it up. And this is the filter that they applied to it. And it's like, oh, okay, that made that into a new thing. And while Prodigy making a song is certainly a creative act that results in a creative product,
You're more interested if it's from scratch.
Yeah. And like just in general, I mean, to me, it is more worthy. A thing is more worthy if it is original rather than a remix of something. And I think dubstep has that aspect to it. But like it makes me think that heaping scorn on dubstep is just a sort of like weird internet herd mentality thing.
Yeah,
that
agree.
Runs counter to the belief systems of the people that I hear doing it, as far as I know, in a really weird way that I'm not, I don't get it.
No,
It's like people on the internet, games journalists making fun of dubstep is like hillbillies drinking Bud Light. Like, I just don't get it. Like, I think you're just doing this because you're doing this. Maybe somebody did it as a joke to start with, and then everybody else was like, oh yeah, wow, the Emperor's Clothes are really wub, wub, wub.
Well, I mean, it is easy to make fun of bad dubstep because it is just oomps, 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 but...
But I mean, no easier than any electronic music.
Sure, exactly. I mean,
it has been more or less just like a steady curve since the 90s, I mean, right? Like, anything, this is not new.
Yeah, 90% of everything is crap. So, sure, just like anything else, you have to look a little bit to find the good dubstep, but it's worth doing. I think
Skrillex is pretty good. Did you play Skrillex Quest?
I did. It was neat.
Yeah, it's a cool game. Kevin, did you play Skrillex Quest?
I did not. I don't know.
I only found 38% of the things in Skrillex Quest.
I missed seeing what my percentage was. I got, I think 4 of the 6 keys or whatever.
No. Yeah, there's a lot of things hidden.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, you can collect all of the things that make Skrillex Skrillex, like glasses and I guess a haircut. Half a haircut. Anyway. Yeah, everybody should play Skrillex Quest. The question that was sent in, and this is not yet the listener's mail section, but in case we don't get to the listener's mail section, it was, how do you feel about adver gaming in general? You know what game was great was that Perfect Strangers game that company made as an example of their adver gaming.
That was the same guys, wasn't it?
I don't know.
7-Up Spot game was pretty good, as I recall.
Which one?
Like a
7-Up Cool Spot was right. Yo Noid was not as
I never played Yo Noid.
Like, it doesn't have to be bad, right? I mean, there've been a lot of good things made for clearly mercenary commercial purposes.
Right.
Was Skrillex Quest for commercial purposes? And were advertising Skrillex?
It was advertising Skrillex. Skrillex worked on it as a promotional thing.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, I don't know. If I make a game and the theme of it is my butt, is that like an adver game for my butt? Is like anything that relates to anything in the real world an adver game?
I guess that's the question.
I'm surprised that you're willing to use the word adver game because you normally hate when people come up with terms like that.
Oh yeah, I just did it without paying attention. I had all my cynicism and bile turned off.
Well, that'll change in the coming week.
That's probably true. I'm going to start hating everything. Man, I don't know. I might just be floating on a cloud of poppy flavored bliss. I don't know.
Do you think your employer will do a drug test and that you will test totally positive?
Yeah. You've tested, because of all the opiates I've been taking, I tested positive for bagels.
We have a strict no-bagel policy.
Yeah, well, if you're going to eat bagels, you have to eat plain bagels, because anything else is just crass. A bagel is so good that especially adding everything to it, seriously, like
a Zen parable.
Yeah. Sauerkraut.
We were also trying to come up
with some sort of like sardukar/sauerkraut. Sauerkraut.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. We're trying to come up with a new Dune-themed menu for Denny's, or Doonies, as we call it.
Were you like making fun of the Hobbit menu? Is that the idea?
We were making fun of it. I think we were jubilating in it.
You could have a nice 7-layered Muad dip.
Okay. Muad dip, yeah, okay.
What what games have you been playing, Zach?
Oh, Skrillex Quest. Okay. I played a bunch of Borderlands 2. I tried to get further into that.
I bought that on Steam so that I can play it properly, but I haven't got around to playing it yet.
I think that I've finally gotten to I've gotten to the point where I'm engaged in and enjoying the sort of core loop of it. Mm-hmm. Even getting the first backpack size upgrade once I hit town made a huge difference in just the like kind of minute to minute aggravation of dealing with like the first Borderlands, the PC port is so not designed from a UI standpoint to be played on a fucking PC, and it drives me fucking batshit.
That sucks.
Does it control with mouse and keyboard, though?
It's fine, yeah. Right, you know, shooting stuff, I mean, that's all, like, that I think is way better than a console, just because I think the WASD and mouse is way better than twin sticks. But, like, just the way that you equip something from your backpack is that you click on something in your backpack, and then you click over to your equipment pane of that, and that sort of swings forward, and then you click on another spot. But I don't know that there is any indication of what you're holding when you do that. And so it's not a big deal once you get used to it. It's just like if you've played anything else on a PC where the interface makes any sense, it just takes a little while getting back into it to like...
On the console, I found the interface for that stuff really baffling.
It's... I don't know that I've ever found a console RPG that has a good, like, comparative tooltip interface for equipping stuff from inventory. Like... I felt this way about the interface for inventory in Fallout 3 and Fallout New Vegas when I first played it. I was like, oh, god damn it. This is a shitty menu, like, console port bullshit. But I totally got used to it, right? And I think it's just from playing hundreds of hours of those games. Like, eventually it just seems like, oh, this is just the way the world is. The same way you get used to, like, somebody kicking you in the nuts real lightly every couple minutes all day. Like, you know, I'm not enjoying this, but I'm not constantly thinking about how horrible it is anymore, because that's all I'd be thinking about. Yeah, so that's what Borderlands 2 is like. It's like being kicked in the nuts every couple of minutes, just constantly, until you just get used to it, and that's the way the world works. Yeah. I'm having fun. I'm going and killing stuff.
There's funny things.
Yeah, hearing pretty funny things. I played some of a game called Don't Starve. Did we talk about this?
I remember you bringing it up. I don't know how much we talked about it.
On a podcast. It's all right. Maybe someday it'll be a good game that I want to play a lot of. Right now it's a diversion. Feels like a Flash game that got made into a Steam game, and then they're working on it. You don't starve.
Cool.
When you do, the game is over. But normally you just get killed by a spider.
Oh.
It's like real life in
so
that way.
So,
for the most part,
called it,
you get
don't
killed,
get
by,
killed
a spider.
By a spider.
Or don't shit your pants. That's another way you can die.
That was a good game.
Man, and then I was, for the first time in a really, really long time, I was up all night playing a game last night, and that game was Far Cry 3.
Ah, how is it?
I don't know yet. I played 6 hours of it.
Wow. Like in one stretch?
No, in two stretches, I think.
Okay.
It is, so this got me thinking about, like, it definitely has something that made me want to keep playing it, and I've thought about how you, Kevin, have described the book The Da Vinci Code.
Yeah.
As not being a good book, but being a page turner. And I think that at the very least, Far Cry 3 is that for a video game. It has such a preponderance of things for you to do, and things for you to do that give sort of tangible numeric rewards and, you know, a new gun or a new ability or a new, you know, more things to do unlock or whatever. you just keep playing it. It plays more like Red Faction Guerrilla than anything I've seen since then, in the sense of there just being a whole bunch of little... It's got a lot of the kind of... There's another game that I was going to bring up in this context where, like, you know the rampages in Vice City where it's like you, all right, well, here's the thing that when you activate this thing, it just puts you in a little pocket dimension where you get unlimited ammo with this thing and you have a time limit to kill as many of these dudes as you want. There's just a ton of shit like that, you know, and I don't know how much of the world it turns off when you're doing stuff like that. I know there are things where it's like, get on this ATV and deliver this medicine to this point. And so it's just like a crazy time trial on an ATV. And in that, the world, either that event generates a bunch of dudes chasing you around in trucks and shooting at you, or there are just the normal number of dudes driving around in trucks chasing you and shooting at you. to deal with. There is a part of me that feels like I'm going to get sick of this game because all of the enemies are just dudes that you shoot. You know, and all of your interactions with the world are shoot dude with gun. But I mean, it's not entirely, like, you know, some of your interactions are sneak up behind a bunch of dudes and kill them with a knife. There was one, somebody posted a screenshot of one of the quest assignments, which was, a pirate is causing trouble near some old cars. Kill him with a knife. This is your assignment. And you get a lot of those. You get a lot of, like, there is this really contrived, but not, I feel like I've been listening to a lot of dudes on podcasts talk about this game. And I think that the sense that I get is a lot of the people that I've been listening to reviews of this game from have been playing the shit out of it and having fun, but don't feel like it's a really worthy experience. And so they're trying to find stuff to not like about it, and basically everybody is talking about how
so like they feel bad for sitting and just eating an entire bag of candy.
Yeah, maybe that's it. I don't know. I don't want to put words in the mouths of the dudes that I listen to on podcasts.
Like, what is substantively different between this and like Skyrim or World of Warcraft?
It is a lot. It is a lot like Skyrim. I mean, you know, that box quote, like Skyrim with guns, is just 100% true.
Huh. Okay.
So, but even to the point where when you level up, there's like some dudes going, it's like, oh man, I leveled up and somebody else got lung cancer. Like, this is the way the world works. It's a very tightly modeled ecosystem.
But I don't feel like people were saying the same kinds of things about Skyrim. They weren't saying this game, you know, is pretty empty, but you know, I'm still
well, no, okay. So, but the things that they are saying is like, all of these characters are assholes, and I don't want to save them. I would rather let these pirates kill them or sell them into slavery because I don't like any of the... Like, I mean, it basically starts out, you are a bunch of, like, douchey adventure tourists going to this island, and you go on a parachuting trip, you all get kidnapped when your parachutes don't land in the right place. And then you turn into... Like, you wake up, I don't remember what happens. You get hit in the head or something, and you wake up, and you've been rescued by Steve Biko, and it's not really Steve Biko. It's just a guy. It's just a black guy. It's just a black guy. I think all black guys are Steve Biko.
It's your only weakness.
And he's given you this tattoo that turns you into, like, a magic wizard warrior.
What?
It's really contrived. So as you level up, Your tattoo magically gains new little pieces of spider.
No
and stuff.
Fucking way. This is ridiculous. Seriously?
Yeah, it's yeah, but it's awesome. It's awesome. And I, like,
it sounds pretty rad.
It's got the whole, like, I don't know. I've also seen some criticism leveled against it for the, like, kind of noble savage, and then the white guy comes in and, like, oh, I've learned so much from these noble savages about how to get in touch with my inner spider tattoo and more effectively murder dudes because I've let go of my iPad. Like, so you know, basically, if the game is going to have a story, it needs a story that makes you into some sort of superhuman murder machine, right? And what they've decided is that you, through the magic of this tattoo, are channeling the spirit of this ancient tribe and, you know, activating their relics in all of their buried hidden temples and stuff, which is what makes it awesome. That's what makes it a game that's not about shooting dudes. And you wouldn't criticize Skyrim for your dude being a magic warrior wizard.
Well, no, but I mean, Tommy Vercetti isn't magical, right?
Yeah, but he's... I mean, that is not a particularly... Well, I don't know. Is that a particularly character-driven game? This game tries to give your character an idea. Like, every time you skin an animal, you're like, ugh, fuck. And so it's like, man, I've made you do this, like, 200 times. Like, get... You do not make this noise when you cut a dude's throat, but skinning an animal grosses you out to the point where you, like, also there's basically animals all over the place, which, you know, that you can kill a pig and it will roll down a hill. And I guess maybe later you can get a skill that turns a pig into a grenade and then you can get some emergent gameplay. But you can gain a skill in your tattoo that makes it so animals have twice as much skin.
What the fuck?
This is, you know, it's just changing your perceptions, I guess. Every enemy that you kill is just a dude with like a red hat on, and they do not have 1% of the number of barks that they should have for it not to just get like, I swear to God, 90% of what these guys are saying is that it hurts to pee because they got the clap from that whore. And I don't really, like, I don't know if the pirate leader, who, I mean, people have talked about that character being obnoxious too, but I it's a pretty cool character. Maybe he's just feeding them some sort of drug that makes them think that they're having sex with some whore and they're actually getting, it hurts when they pee because of that drug, or maybe it's God punishing them for being pirates and slavers, because I have not found a single whore. And you would think from the way that these guys talk about it that there would just be whores with the clap everywhere.
Maybe there's just one and she gets around, but you haven't met her yet.
Maybe that's the replacement for the malaria mechanic.
Oh, right. Maybe later on you. Oh, God. Okay. So, yeah, later on, there's a twist in the middle of the game where you get the clap from that whore. And at the most tense moments, it's suddenly like, oh, fuck, I gotta pee. Oh, it really hurts. And you start saying those things. Oh, it burns when I pee. I must have got the clap from that whore. And then that alerts all of the murderous pirates to your presence. So like Dishonored, this is a game that requires a lot of dudes to pee a lot of the time because that's a
like
thing
like all the best video games.
Yeah, like the best video games because it forces them to take a break from their walking, from their patrol routes, right?
And turn so it's and like, face
yeah,
a wall.
And go, yeah, they turn yeah. and face a wall. They go they get away from their buddies, but every single time anyone pees, all he can talk about is how much it hurts when he pees because he got the clap from that whore.
I see. I thought you were saying they were just saying it all the time.
No, I think they also are, because sometimes you'll hear that when there's nobody peeing. Sometimes you'll hear that when there's nobody around. So I guess it could be part of the fiction that your character just always has his iPhone turned on, just listening to a really weird podcast on repeat.
This one, perhaps.
Or it's like one of those number stations, yeah. Except it's the...
Oh, man, that's the code phrase. The yeah. Code, yeah, so you just, you know, if you parachute into enemy territory, if you tune into this talk radio show and it's just a guy complaining about having gotten the clap from this whore and how it hurts when he pees, that you're supposed to use locker number P17 at the airport to drop off the microfilm. There are a lot of really goofy things about it. To me, they all fit pretty well under the umbrella of suspension of disbelief, and I am entirely okay with them. Like, I think because Skyrim is a fantasy world, all of the bullshit that you have to do to make a thing into a video game, which some might argue, some including me might argue, is nearly fundamentally incompatible with the notion of a story. I think it's not going to bother you to do this crazy bullshit in a fantasy world where it's like, oh, no, it's dragons. You know, whereas when you're like, you're some college kid in a place that's supposedly on Earth, it has to be justified. Your backdrop is the real world, and so this stuff is going to seem really stupid.
Right.
Because it is really stupid. It's also really stupid in Skyrim. It's just that the entire world of Skyrim is some stupid fantasy bullshit. So, yeah. You know. I don't know, man. I am kind of excited to get done recording this podcast so that I can go home and play it some more.
Wow.
Yeah, I have World of Warcraft battle pets to fight and collect.
Is that a fighting game any fun?
It's okay. I was spending almost all of my WoW time working on collecting pets even before this happened. Mm. So the fact that this gives you something to do with them and has like doubled the number of pets in existence is plenty enough to make it interesting for me.
Do you have a disgusting oozling?
I believe I do, yeah. Mm-hmm.
What happens when about all the custom, like, special, like, limited pets from people who got the
collector's edition.
Or went to BlizzCon or whatever?
They you can fight with those too. I don't know if, generally speaking, if like they have better stats or anything like that. It's possible that some of them do.
Do they count for collecting them all?
Yeah.
Huh. That's rough.
Well, there isn't. I don't think collecting them all is a real achievement. I mean, a given achievement that pops up a thing that says you did this. There are levels of, like, you collected 250. Now here's your next target.
I see.
But since they're going to continue adding more and more,
right,
then getting all of them is a moving goalpost.
So there's not just like one pet that like dominates because it has the best stats or anything. It's like a rock, paper, scissors kind of thing, or
yeah, it's like Pokemon. There are different breeds of them, and the attacks that they have do better or worse damage against other breeds depending on the attack. So there is, like, I'm sure there is a pet that is the best pet against beast type pets, but there isn't a single best pet.
Okay. Do you get to know what, like, how do you don't get to know what kind of pet your opponent is going to use before you commit to a battle, right, I assume?
Not PvP battles, no.
Do you have like a team of three pets that you swap in and out, like the Pokemans, to give you, so that each fight isn't just a foregone conclusion?
Yeah, you get a team of three. That is your team that you have set in between fights.
Do you have to go to a place to do this, or is it like just an interface element that you can turn on and then have fights with dudes?
There's some of both. There are specific guys out in the world who are like pet battle NPCs that quests will take you, you know, go fight Bob in Red Ridge Mountains. But there are also just wild critters running around. Like, you know how there's squirrels everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the squirrels now have little green paw icons over their heads, so you run up to one and click it, and you're pet battling that.
Wow. Huh.
And if you get it down below a quarter of its hit points, you can try and capture it, and that adds it to your list
of
pets.
It's like just flat out Pokemon.
Yeah,
wow. Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Jesus. Yeah. Do you need Pokeballs to capture them?
There is an achievement after a bit that improves the cage that you use to catch them with. But
you need brass balls.
There aren't usable items or anything. Yeah, what have you been up to, Kevin?
I have mostly been playing Letterpress, actually. It is fun. I'm really enjoying it. I paid the $1 or whatever so that I can play an unlimited number of games, and I started like 20 games with strangers and have gotten to the point where if I start a game and it lets me have the first move, I just delete the game because I want to play against people that have had that first move and still try to beat them, because getting the first move gives you a potentially significant advantage.
So. Yeah. You know how I was saying that I wanted a 25x25 version of this to experiment on? And you know how this awesome guy, Chris, works for our video game company? Today, he sent me a link that was like, oh, I made a prototype 25x25 letterpress game, just multiplayer, on my website. We should play with it and see if it's any fun. It was kind of fun. It's kind of buggy.
Yeah.
Stupid. Why don't you be better at making games, dummy? I said.
I'm a little surprised why he didn't just use the dictionary that we have been building up for several years now instead of some random dictionary on the web.
Well, he built it on his server instead of ours, so that would have been a very non-trivial process.
Okay.
I think he's just trying to keep some separation there in case he wants to sell that game on the iPads.
Oh yeah.
I don't know.
Oh, did you not
anyway, it was
did
fun.
You not have him sign one of those things where you give him $1 for all his ideas in the
Well,
future?
No, cuz he's a anything that he does on the clock.
Okay.
I'm not paying him to make this thing that is based on a suggestion from some random asshole on a podcast. Have you learned anything about the game? Have you come to any deeper conclusions? Have you learned anything about yourself? Have you learned how to love, Kevin?
I mean, having a big vocabulary is important. Being kind of an asshole and playing subtle variations on other words that people have played is important. Establishing territory early can be very important, and sort of sequestering off really valuable combinations of letters can be really valuable. Like, if you can get ing as a set that you control that can be really potent. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like there's a bunch of people who play this game who aren't very good at it, and it's very easy to beat those people, so those aren't kind of interesting. But then the games where you fight with somebody who has a good vocabulary are they last a long time because you're just trading words back and forth, making subtle, small gains or losses in territory.
But you also have to pay a lot of attention. When you make a move, you have to be paying a lot of attention to what move they are going to be able to make on their next turn.
Yeah. There are some words that I don't play. It's got that sort of chess thing
where you have to be thinking a move ahead.
Yeah, very much. But it's really hard to think two or three moves ahead because you have no idea what they're going to do. So
yeah, and I don't think there's all that much of an advantage to thinking two or three moves ahead either. Like, right. the one move ahead is where it's going to get you.
Yeah, that same friend Chris, that the guy that we work with, we just started playing a game, and I played a word, and then he played everything but the prefix "un" of the same word, and he did that twice in a row, which was kind of funny and annoying.
It's not nice playing against somebody who plays as cutthroat as you, huh?
Yeah, it's great. It's great. It forces me to keep coming up with interesting new words. So.
I don't know anything about the people that made this game, but I think it's
just one guy.
I want to meet that guy and drink a beer out of his skull. I don't know. Yeah.
Bring me an enemy with no eyes.
Huh.
Did you not read that Ogloff strip?
No, I guess not. I thought I had read them all, much to my shame.
The king demands a cup made out of the skull of his enemies, but the beer just pours out the eye holes. So he demands an enemy with no eyes, and they bring him a giant worm, but it doesn't have a skull. And then he's sad because he's so thirsty.
Seems pretty good.
It's pretty good.
No, I don't think that letterpress is a... I think that there are some things that could make it much, much better, but I think that it's like one of the most original word games that I've seen ever.
It's nice. It's like, it's got mechanically stuff like, going on, you know?
The fact that it can generate these boards with like four Z's and no right. vowels and shit like that
would
is
change some stuff about it, but Lauren Brichter is the main person.
Well, maybe it's a lady. So I take back what I said about drinking a beer out of her because that was disrespectful.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Maybe it's not a lady. Maybe I don't know. Maybe I should shut the fuck up. Did you ever consider that?
No, it's a dude.
Stupid.
It's a dude. It is a guy.
No, well, then I'll totally drink a beer out of that dude. Man, I don't know. What's in the news, Kevin?
Well, the thing that people, especially in our little community, our little corner of the internet, have been talking about a lot is the THQ Humble Bundle. Notably, missing the indie section of that. So it's like five or six AAA rated games. Plus a seven.
I guess it's indie in the sense that if THQ doesn't get a lot of money real quick, they're going to be all out of business and doing indie games instead.
Is that true? I don't actually have a sense of what
their stock price was.
Because I mean, THQ
really
is like a publisher. It's a publisher, which is also a studio, right?
I've been hearing that they're in trouble.
But I don't actually know. You know, we're not journalists.
Nope.
Nor are we actually active participants in the video game industry.
Nope.
So we never have any idea what the fuck we're talking about.
What's going on?
We're outsiders, and we get to talk about things without any... There was also, like, I didn't actually put this in my little news roundup or whatever, but there was also some, like,
we're the Wesley Willis of video games.
Ethics and video game journalism and that kind of thing. And we just can ignore all of that shit. So,
yeah, I mean, I always feel uncomfortable expressing any opinions about the business side of anything because I just don't fucking know anything about anything. I mean, I'm not, the more drinks I have, the less uncomfortable I get expressing opinions about almost anything, which is why it is rare in moments like this when I'm having surgery tomorrow that I get to reflect on my many deep flaws.
Because you're not allowed to drink.
So sorry, guys. I'm really sorry about this podcast.
Are you not allowed to like, get wet after midnight or something? Is that going to be a problem?
Yeah, it's weird. Yeah. No, I don't know. I mean, they didn't say don't drink. Part of the reason I'm having all this surgery done is that when I drink at all, it just ruins my face. My sinuses and my throat get so fucked up if I have even like a couple beers and then go to sleep just from the sort of like swelling and congestion that causes. And I just don't want them to be extra fucked up for when I go in there and they have to start working on them. I don't want to feel like shit all day before the surgery when I'm going to feel like shit after the surgery because of my fucked up sinuses. So, yeah, I don't know. Basically, I'm getting this surgery so that I can start drinking more.
Nice.
Which is the thing that I've needed for quite some time. I've got a lot of opinions to express about a lot of business-related things that I'm not particularly well-informed about.
Let's see.
A lot of people are pissed that the Humble Bundle guys are like, oh, no, turns out they're just corporate shills, and all they care about doing is lying in the pockets of CEOs because there's no Linux DRM. And I'm like, what does DRM mean? And they're like, I don't know. I just hate it. Linux. Have you seen my new GNOME?
They made over $2 million in the first 16 hours. Or let me rephrase. The bundle had sold over $2 million worth in the first 16 hours, and it's over $3 million now. It's like up at, what is it, $3.6 million. There's still like 6 days to go, 7 days to go.
Well, cool. Hopefully the donators or the purchasers set their bars in such a way as to give the guys running it enough money to keep the show going.
Yeah, I'm curious. I have no sense of like how much money. I've never seen like a postmortem on a Humble Bundle to see where the percentages were. I don't think you get to get that information. Yeah. I don't know how much money goes to charity.
Do they publish that?
I don't know. Not that I'm aware of. I've never seen the data anywhere. THQ's stock price went up by about 40% over the past few days as a result of the Humble Bundle that they did. So it seems like the public is responding, you know, them being a publicly traded company or whatever, they're pleased that they seem to be having an income source. So who knows, honestly, what
the maybe hell. Now they'll be able to afford a pronounceable acronym.
Yeah,
fuck.
So what else Binding is of new? Binding of Isaac is being remade for a console.
Yep.
So they're going to try to port it to a bunch of different platforms.
For
it sounds
multiplayer
like.
Too.
They're going to rebuild entirely co-op. Not in Flash. Local co-op, new art assets, which it sounds like he wants to do like 16-bit style.
Yeah, he put up a poll with some examples of a variety of different styles, and I don't know, my thoughts on that are like, I'm not playing this for the graphics. I'm playing it for the gameplay and the themes, and so
right.
Kind of doesn't matter.
I like the original graphics.
Yeah. I mean, I voted for the one that looked the most like the original graphics, but just, you know, done pixel art. What's weird is that it seems like it would be harder to do the stuff that that game does to your character in sprites, right? Like just making you arbitrarily larger and smaller, right? Like suddenly there has to be multiple sizes of the coat hanger as opposed to just scaling it up as a vector graphic. Or whatever. I'm curious what that is all about.
In pixels too, right? Like you could interpolate.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like pixel art is no longer limited to the pixels on the screen, right? You can do what the fuck ever with it.
Right.
I don't really like it when that happens. The art style of Hotline Miami bugs me quite a bit because it's like it's pixels, but they can be at angles, and then it's like,
weird.
I'm still waiting to be able to play that. They're supposed to be doing a Mac version, but...
Yeah, I think it was made in Game Maker, so there's no reason that there couldn't be a Mac version. I'm stoked. I'm stoked that am interested to see what he does with the ability to kind of rebalance that game from scratch.
Yeah.
Because even the Halloween update, I feel like made it a little goofy. Like, it made it so much of the time you were getting the horsemen as bosses, and so you just always ended up with the fucking meat cube all the time instead of something useful.
Yeah.
That
kind of thing.
It was really interesting to read his thoughts about sort of what the past year has been like involving Binding of Isaac. Like, he never expected it to be successful at all and just sort of put it out there to sort of as a project. I guess it was like a week-long game jam and then maybe a 3 months of part-time development, and then it was just released. And the first several weeks were just completely full of bugs, and it was just sort of mad bug fixing. And then slowly it became more stable and gained popularity. And it was like a really slow burn in terms of game sales. But it sold over 1 million copies at this point. So
that's cool.
Yeah. Let's see here. The Zynga and Facebook have revamped their agreement, which I wonder what that's going to be for the long term of their relationship. Zynga is now allowed to have games that share properties or whatever and not have the in-game app purchases use Facebook currency, which potentially is huge for them because they've been wanting to launch their own platform for a while.
I wonder if that policy change will extend any more broadly than just their relationship with Zynga or what.
That's what I was about to ask.
It's really frustrating. Just the notion, in a way it's not, because all of the people who've been saying, put KOL on Facebook, and me saying, I don't want to put KOL on Facebook, but now I can just point at it and say, I can't. Right? We can't put KOL on Facebook. It would have to be a different, discrete, distinct version of KOL.
Only if they
got money through them.
Only if they sort of pulled us into that agreement, which at this point it seems like Zynga is still their biggest game customer, and they were maybe the only one that had that particular business model where everything had to be with Facebook cash or whatever.
So were the people that told us about that just afraid of that happening to them instead of sure it would happen to them?
They worked for Zynga.
Oh.
Remember? So they just...
I thought we also had that discussion with the... self-aware guys.
I don't think so.
About them having to have a separate version of their thing for Facebook.
Yeah, I don't know. I think maybe everybody did it just because they were afraid of that possibility, but who knows?
I get everybody confused with everybody else. Oh, it was Steve Biko that said that.
let's see here. There's a class being offered next semester at Rice University where... part of the class is that you play Skyrim. It's like a class on Norse mythology and literature.
And bullshit.
Yeah.
Fantasy bullshit 101.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't exactly know how it is supposed to work, but that's the conceit.
Level up grunting, chapter 6.
But, you know, honestly, if that becomes a paradigm for teaching university classes where they pick a video game and then explore sort of the source material that video game was derived from, and you play the game and talk about some of the source material, that would be a potentially really cool way to get people engaged.
It would just make it so every class was about Tolkien from now on.
No,
I could see a Greek mythology class. Say, all right, go play God of War, and then I'll tell you where all the errors are. And
the American
really
Revolution and Assassin's Creed, something. You know, the new one. Sure. Why not? Sure.
Okay.
I'm not going to say that I think necessarily it's a good idea, but it's an interesting idea.
I think it would be interesting, potentially interesting to sort of tie things in that way and have just sort of a broader, more engaging framework for people to talk about stuff. Let's see here. And then the last thing that I put on my list was that Blizzard registered the Project Blackstone domain name, and people are hypothesizing what that means. I don't know if that has anything to do with Titan, or if it's just something else, or if it's nothing at all.
I think it's an MMO that takes place at a fantasy wizard law school.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And here's their secret. Here's their trick. You and all of the other kids who are playing Project Blackstone with each other, pretending to be wizards in wizard lawyer school, are actually, it's like an Ender's Game sort of situation. You are actually practicing law in the real world by proxy. Right, because at the same time, this company that people think is not a subsidiary of Blizzard introduces the robo-lawyer. And then suddenly everybody can have their own lawyer. It's real cheap relative to a non-robo-lawyer.
That's pretty good.
Also, sometimes it just breaks down into racial epithets during trials, which is that's a bug they're trying to work out. It's a
prosecutor will kindly refrain from referring to the witness as a fag.
Yep.
Will counsel please rename themselves from Spick Nasty 4000?
No, I thought it was Spick Nasty 420.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And Poon Eater.
Yeah, so that's all I got for the news.
So this assignment, Life Force.
Yeah.
Oh, it was good. Riff and I played through it co-op today, and it took like a half an hour, and I felt really good about myself for having comprehensively explored one of our assignments for the first time in a really long time. Riff beat this game.
Wow.
Yeah, it only took me, 40, 50 lives?
Yeah. So how does the co-op work? Because I ended up just playing it single player.
You can, once you run out of guys, you can press a button to steal a guy from the other guy.
Okay.
Which is pretty good. And then when you both run out of lives, you have to continue from the beginning of whatever stage you're in.
Okay. All
right. I don't remember if I think I got to the point with my buddies when I was a kid where we could beat it using just the 30 guys and no continues, but I'm not sure. I'm not 100% sure that that was the case. It is really startling how much of that game I remembered. It was just a thing that I used to play through a lot.
Hmm. I was really startled to discover that I was playing Lord British all that time.
Yeah, did you read the Wikipedia article about this game?
No.
So in the original arcade version, where I guess there was some cutscene stuff, the player one ship is the Vic Viper, which is like the main character ship from Gradius. But the second player's ship is called Lord British.
What the
Except
fuck?
It's sometimes referred to in the game text as Road British.
Whoa.
And yeah, man, I yeah, it does explain why when we had when we were having drinks with Richard Garriott, there was a tiny glowing additional Richard Garriott trailing behind him, drinking a smaller version of his Cosmopolitans.
Sure, I thought that was just his costume, his cosplay, but
yeah,
the upgrade system is cool, but it hits a brick wall at some point where you just can't upgrade anymore.
I guess if you're so good at the game that you don't immediately get killed every time anything happens.
Well, so I played it in an emulator, and I saved early and often, just to see what happened. And like, you get really powerful, and it's except for like running into stuff because you don't know when things are going to happen, like all the dodging and stuff that you have to do. It's not that hard to stay alive. The end of the game is kind of nuts. That like sort of like last 30 seconds or a minute of just dodging shit.
Yeah, the just crazy high speed thing that you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's part of it you need to be at the bottom of the screen so that you can see the stuff coming. But then there's that one gate that closes all the way because fuck you.
Yep.
Like. It's probably a game where somebody could get really good at it and beat it without ever getting hit, and then you'd be really impressed. Like when my buddy Jimmy and I went to his cousin's house and watched him beat Contra before anybody knew the Konami code.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, I've never seen past the first level of Contra before. You must be some sort of god. I'll bet you have all the girlfriends. Nope, turns out I live in a battery. He didn't really live in a battery. He lived in a battery store.
Oh, weird.
Okay.
Like inside the retail establishment?
Yeah. I think his parents owned a battery store, and there was just a cot in the back room where he lived, being good at Contra.
Huh. Huh.
Yeah. Seemed like the coolest guy in the world, but I bet he wasn't actually the coolest guy in the world. I just thought so because of his sweet, sweet-ass van. Anyway, that guy was really good at Contra. I'll say that for him.
I really like the game. Did you ever play it in the arcade?
No.
Yeah.
Well, actually, yes. I did a little bit at Galloping Ghost.
Never enough to get good at it, but there was one in one of the arcades that I used to go to.
Gradius and any Gradius like seems like a sucker bet at an arcade. Like, yeah, it's just gonna be a quarter eater.
But that's, you know, it places like Galloping
Ghost. The arcade
Ghost
version is really pretty
play,
though.
That's kind of fine. Yeah.
I don't know that I have a lot to say about this game. I kind of wanted us to play it. I really, really like it. It does
really
a lot with a limited number of sprites.
The story here, like what you flying inside a guy.
You sort of alternate between like the first thing you kill is his brain.
Then, yeah, what? I don't understand any of what's going on in that game.
Yeah, I mean, I think they wanted a lot of cool-looking environments. But what is amazing is the number of cool-looking environments that they packed into an NES cartridge. Like, I remember being just blown away by those big waves of fire. Like, wow, that is the biggest thing I've ever seen on a Nintendo game.
Those and the fangs. In the arcade version, they look fantastic.
Yeah. It is weird, though, the fangs, the sprites don't... Like, they're not layered correctly or something.
That's weird.
Which, that, I was like, what? Man, I'm seeing behind the curtain in a way that I really don't want to. I remember being super excited about those blood platelet enemies. Like, oh, man, that's the best enemy. I don't know why. And then how cool those looked, and then how dumb some of the other, like, oh, here's just a sphere of blue, disparate blue pixels. What is that? A piece of pollen got in here. Oh, I'm sorry. An entire Egyptian temple and a mummy and a mummy head.
Was weird. All the robotic stuff. I was like, am I still inside something? What's going on here?
Yep.
I don't think this is like a shooter game. This is like a side-scrolling shooter. Is that how that?
Yeah,
it's a space shooter.
Space shooter.
I thought it was pretty good. Like it definitely made me
not really enough bullets to call it a bullet hell.
Right. Yeah. I would definitely go back and play that again in a year or two after I'd forgotten about how all the levels worked.
Oh man, you won't forget. You'll always remember it. I remembered where most of the things were going to jump out at me. Where those pathways were forming as you went through it. That shit was cool. Those big things that shoot out all the veins. When you first see it, you're like, what's that? Whoa, I'm dead because of veins. That ruled. I think that's my favorite level. I think the blood level. And then suddenly at the end, it's like, oh man, this vein has a rib cage in it.
Yeah.
And it's skull. Yeah, skull. But it doesn't have brain in it because we killed the brain earlier.
Yeah, the fact that the brain isn't the last boss is strange. I don't understand. You fight the
It's pretty cool,
eyeball.
Though. I mean, I also remember being really pleased by how big that brain was.
Yeah.
And, like, it does not have a lot of repeating tiles in it, as near as I can tell. Like, I was looking at the brain as we were fighting it. No, the brain. I'm saying the brain. Like, it really looked like a sprite that was the size of the enemy. Mm. And that was pretty cool. And then they reused those brain ones in the... as sort of the walls in the blood vessel level, some of the pattern on the brain stuff. And then in those cases, like some of the tiles don't quite match up. It is such a nice looking game that the cases where it's like, you can see the square bottoms of those fangs, those cases are really, you know, when you get into the fire and it's just like, oh, the fire just has a crisp pixel flat edge on the side of it. It's like, oh, that is uncharacteristically video gamey. For what has otherwise been like a super pretty thing. Easter Island heads, man. The shoe Fruit Loops every game. It's great.
So what's our next assignment?
We're going to do Paper Mario because we got a while.
Okay.
And I want us to play Paper Mario. Because Paper Mario is good. It's for the Nintendo 64. You can play it on an emulator, I guess. You could go buy a copy of it at Bookman's. I bought a copy at a used bookstore, and it says JoJo in crayon on it, and I cannot. Aww. I've never been able to clean off where JoJo wrote his name on. And also, JoJo, like, that does not seem like.
That's usually a monkey's name, so I'm guessing a monkey wrote that.
Yeah, or Richard Pryor, like a baby Richard Pryor.
Okay.
Hey, I don't know. There was that movie JoJo Dancer, Your Life is Calling, which is like the semi-autobiographical thing about Richard Pryor.
Huh, okay.
So I just assumed that this copy of Paper Mario belonged to Richard Pryor. And that the reason that I couldn't get the crayon off is because he accidentally set it on fire while he was freebasing cocaine, and it etched the crayon markings into the cartridge.
Hmm. I think that sounds reasonable.
Paper Mario. Boop. Hey, guys, how about some listener's mail?
Sure.
Okay.
We'll do a couple quick ones. The Dog Delusion says, I have a question about your preferences as players and game designers regarding player skill versus character skill. Obviously, for puzzle games or some old-school arcade games and such, the skill of you as a player is the main factor in how well you do in the game. In other cases, like an RPG or JRPG or in certain kinds of action games, your character earns new abilities, and as a result, you can overcome more difficult challenges without necessarily being a better player just by grinding your character's skill to a higher level. What are your thoughts on the balance of player skill versus character skill and how that balance affects how good a game is? I mean, there is room in my game playing for a wide spread of both of those things.
Yeah. Agreed.
As a designer, I have tended to focus on character skill and player knowledge rather than what you'd normally think of as a video game skill, because it is only very recently that the tool sets have become available for me to make anything like a Twitch game with my very limited programming abilities. But I'm really interested in trying to do something like that. I think The Binding of Isaac is a great example of more or less everything that is good about video games, because it is very much a thing that you have to get better at.
Yeah.
A lot of getting better at it is getting accustomed to enemy patterns and understanding what items do. So a lot of it is just knowledge, which, you know, you can always stand in
that's the
wiki.
Was overwhelming for me was just the hundreds of things I did not know. And not wanting to jump into a wiki, but I mean, I guess that's just me being obstinate at that point.
I think, though, that you could probably, and I'm curious if he's going to do this, you could just have like a little tooltip. This is what this item does, right?
But goes against his design philosophy, though. Like, he wanted a game where you had to, like, it was mysterious and that you had to discover stuff through trial and error and use.
Yeah, but you have to discover it once. I mean, once you've discovered it once, you're just going to look it up in the wiki. And I think that, like, yeah, I don't know. I mean, why does he bother telling you when you get a range up instead of just letting you figure out that your range is higher, right? I mean, once you've seen that, if you pick up a pill that you've already identified, he tells you what it does. It's not like he's just forcing you to write it down.
But
so
change every game, so there's no way to learn with those.
Sure.
Right?
Right, but I'm saying that once you've encountered something once and picked it up and used it, maybe it unlocks the ability for the game to tell you what it does so that you don't have to, like, pause, tab out, and look it up to remember. You know? I don't know. It's, you know, with Kingdom of Loathing, it is very much a character skill-driven game, but for a competitive play or the sort of high-end, more interesting to us goals that we put in, they very much reward a level of sort of metagame knowledge that you definitely get better at over time. And there are a lot of things about it that are where the leaderboards are clearly reflective of player skill and not character skill. Which I think is cool and lucky that it happened that way, because a traditional just like level grinding RPG is not like that at all.
Yeah.
You know, with something like World of Warcraft, even there is certainly in PvP a lot of tactical skill that you have in raid stuff.
Yeah.
It's also, I mean, the majority of the time that they spend designing content is stuff that is at that bleeding edge where player skill, because character skill is fixed at the level cap at any given time.
They're adding in the things in the game's where history. You have to be You have to have a lot of awareness of what's going on around you and what attacks you should be using in what circumstances and things like that.
But also, I mean, player skill comes into play even when you're doing grindy character skill driven stuff by you applying some thought to doing it efficiently and stuff like that. And that's pretty gratifying. You know, I don't know that I'm less interested in a game where there is no increase in your ability over time. Right, like the character skill in Life Force is how many speed power-ups you've got or whatever, and it kind of sucks to lose those.
Yeah,
you know, but it is a better game because it has the power-ups. I would argue it is only a good game because it has the power-ups, because it gives you the character skill thing gives you something to strive for and gives you a sense of loss beyond just I've lost the guy. Ah, oh, fuck, I've lost the guy and the work that I put into building up the character. That is the guy.
Yep.
I mean, I
love character building games. I love sort of leveling up something or like upgrading. I love those sort of like upgrade mechanisms a lot. But I also feel like good games reward the character upgrading by also making it sort of you have more options. So you have to get better as a player to understand how and when to use those things. It's like getting a bunch of new skills makes your character stronger, theoretically, but you still have to know when and how to use all that to make it meaningful. So.
Yep. I like a spread. Deep Blue Sea says, hey, video games hot doggers. What's your take on re-releases of video games on newer systems? I'm a big fan of Skies of Arcadia release on GameCube. They added in a few extra things not affecting overall storyline and reduced the frequency of the random encounters, but I was not a supporter of the Final Fantasy IV release on the DS. It seemed like the 3D graphics were too big of a change for me. Feel free to call me a huge idiot for saying that, but it seemed to change too much from the game I grew up playing. No, I was totally not interested in that game because of the, like, it's like, hey, let's retrofit this game to the graphics of an era where I thought that graphics were total bullshit. Like, hey, let's don't do that instead. You know, the DS port of Chrono Trigger, I think, was a pretty perfect example of that, right? It's like, all right, so here is a good game with a lot of the things that the lens of history reveals to be a little bit annoying, like not having a map and shit. Mm-hmm. Like, let's just add all that stuff in. Let's just fix this for you.
Yeah.
And kind of modernize the game, but without getting rid of any of the charm of it, which is great.
The Final Fantasy remakes for DS were terrible. I couldn't bring myself to play any of them because of what they did to the graphics.
I played the Super Nintendo Final Fantasy III reissue on the Game Boy Advance. That was the closest I ever got to seriously playing that game. I still only apparently got like a third of the way through it. When I felt like, God, this has got to be over soon. I'm trying to think if there's any... I mean, have there been really significant reissues of games that I've spent much time on in the history of this podcast? Can you think of anything that we've gotten particularly excited about? Because, I mean, we just tend to play stuff on emulators.
Yeah. I was going to say, did you play Ocarina of Time? Or is that not out yet?
Oh, the Ocarina of Time remake?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I didn't... you can't go home again.
I never played the original one, so I couldn't really... I thought it was... I thought the 3DS implementation... Was it DS? No, that was a 3DS one. I thought the implementation was pretty good. It looked good.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I like ports of stuff in the sense that it reduces the barrier of entry to being able to play these things in the future, you know? But that barrier to entry, as long as there are nerds in the world, is going to be pretty negligible to people who really care about it, right? Like, I don't think that we stand to lose the ability to play Atari games because modern hardware doesn't support Atari games, because somebody will write an emulator for any hardware that'll let you play an Atari game.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not that there aren't things that are in danger of being lost because of that. I just think that those are just things that nobody has gotten a hair up their ass to take care of preserving yet.
Right.
Skeptopotamus says, why do people use WASD to describe the keyboard movement cluster instead of ASWD? You're missing out on the opportunity to say console shooters are okay, but I get much better control with my hands on the mouse and the ASWD cluster.
I mean, they're just measuring it left to right, top down, right? It's not a, an artistic statement when they say WASD.
I'm guessing that this question was mostly a joke.
What? No, we must treat everything with the equal candor and respect.
Our chicken says, I asked the video games tacos and wanted to pose the question to the gents. When given the choice between a male and female character, which do you pick? Is there any particular reason? I always pick a male character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
General, it depends on the game. Generally, I will pick a female avatar if it looks like... Like, if I'm going to be seeing that avatar a lot, I'll pick the female one.
Right, because you want to get a boner while you play video games.
Well, no.
You want a character that you can masturbate to.
If you get to see the avatar, then 9 times out of 10, you'll get to pick what clothes the avatar is wearing. And I think a cuter avatar, which is usually the female avatar, is more fun as a dress-up toy.
Just because there's a greater variety of things to put on it as opposed to just breastplate.
Yeah, basically.
And pant.
Pant.
A pantsuit.
Yeah.
Like a slacks. For a guy, I mean, you've got like a pair of pants.
It's also because I like playing a stealthy, agile, dexterity sort of character, and the female characters tend to be...
More lithe.
More lithe. Yeah, that's the word I was looking for. And I don't know. It looks better.
Would you ever play a female dwarf? Here's a question. This is going to reveal whether or not you only select a character based on whether you can masturbate to it or not. Would you ever play a female dwarf?
Is the choice male dwarf or female dwarf?
No, the choice is anything or female dwarf.
What, anything at all? Toaster?
Sure.
Female toaster?
Hello Kitty toaster with octopus legs.
Yeah, I'm sorry, that wins.
Okay.
Does the female dwarf have a beard?
Do they have beards?
Well, it depends on...
In World of Warcraft? I don't think so.
Not in World of Warcraft, no. But the Discworld
Lord of the Rings
ones do. Yeah. Well, it's Lord of the Rings is debatable. I don't think he ever says.
They never say whether there are female dwarves or not.
Yeah.
Right.
But they definitely in Discworld, the female dwarves have beards.
I think I definitely have probably a bias towards male characters if I want to be spending a lot of time playing the game. Because I want it to be more sort of like my avatar in a world. But I switch back and forth pretty readily if I make more than one character, I'll probably do 50-50, male and female. So
I think I get innately uncomfortable with, and this bugs me playing something like Skyrim, where I kind of wish that all the bandits were male, because there is an innate discomfort that I experience when faced with violence towards women, I think. And I don't
so you're
know.
Saying you're
I mean,
sexist is really.
Well, yeah. So, but I was saying, I don't know if this. I don't know if like, oh, being vehemently opposed to violence against women makes me progressive or sexist. I can't fucking tell anymore. I'm sorry, internet. I can never tell which things I'm meant to be ashamed of. But like, when my character gets hurt, I think if I was constantly being met with like the sounds of a woman in pain, I would not. That would make me unhappy. It would just make for a more like just sort of distracting and unpleasant experience. Whereas I can just kind of ignore killing dudes. I can't really ignore killing dudes. Like I think about it sometimes. I think, man, this video game's sure got me killing a lot of dudes. Oh well, that's just what the game is. Just stab some more dudes. That's the one thing about Far Cry. All the enemies are dudes so far. Cause since I haven't met that whore. Right. But presumably you don't get to kill her.
How about in Hotline Miami?
I haven't. I've only played like a level.
Oh, okay.
Of it. Isn't that mostly people in chicken masks?
I think the main character wears an animal mask. Yeah. I don't know if the bad guys do or not.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, I will occasionally make a female character in an MMO for whatever reason, but I never ever stick to them. Like, I kind of, it is pretty weird the way in which in a busy MMO, a female avatar will get unwanted attention from other players. I think that's less true the less crowded an MMO is.
Okay, maybe. I'm the server I play on is not busy, but I like all my WoW characters have always been female, and I've never gotten any extra attention.
Really? Nobody just comes up and like gives you gold and bags and stuff when you start a new character? Because that happened to me a lot in early WoW when I was just randomly making a lot of characters to try out different classes and stuff.
Huh.
Yeah, I don't know.
And I even, you know, I use smileys in chat and all the things that would probably cause a person to assume
10 gold for sexy naked mailbox dance.
But I cannot relate to the reports of female avatars getting weird or extra attention.
I really do wish that like those fucking crazy antler people in Skyrim, like, I wish that I wasn't constantly killing women and then stripping them down to their underwear. Like, I wish that wasn't part of the core loop of that game, because it makes me kind of uncomfortable.
Do you wish you could just go all the way and skin them entirely? And your guy would go, ah.
Or maybe get a skill that would
Give them finally. I'm glad something finally crossed the line for you. Fucking silent protagonist Cypher. Okay. Hey, Kevin.
Yeah.
Do you have anything else to say about this subject?
I do not.
Do you have anything else to say about how somebody would send us a question if they wanted to send us a question?
Yes. I think they should tweet us at VGHotDog. They should email us VGHotDog@gmail.com, or they should check out our forums available at a link from our website, videogameshotdog.com. That's what I
agree with all of those things that you just said, buddy.
Cool.
Hey, I've had a good time doing a podcast with you, and I hope we can do it again soon. I'm not positive how long. I have no sense at all of how long this recovery is going to take.
I'm going to say we're not going to be recording an episode next week, but we will do one in 2 weeks.
Okay.
And there might even be a surprise.
There might be a surprise. The surprise is Riff isn't here. Yay! All right, well, until next time, whenever that may be, thanks for listening to Video Games Hot Dog, audience, and thanks for doing a Video Games Hot Dog with me, bros.
Thanks for having us, you.
Have a great weekend.
Bye, guys.